We're beginning now. Howard's going to orally review what we accomplished last week, which is chapter 253, Reish Nun Gimel, Halacha Aleph. And we began Halacha Aleph by saying that you generally cannot leave a pot on an open fire before Shabbos. I don't care that you don't intend to play with the fire. I don't care you don't intend to even eat the food tonight. You want the food for Shal Shudas, for lunch. I don't care. Whatever the rule is, whatever the reason for your food, you can't leave a pot on an open fire before Shabbos. That's the general rule. Now, the first part of this halacha gave two exceptions to that rule. And we said you're allowed to keep a pot on an open fire, essentially, if the food is fully cooked before Shabbos, and further cooking would be detrimental to the food. I personally like a chulent that's more and more and more cooked and cooked and cooked. I like a more crispier, drier chulent than a wetter, soupier, larger chulent. So for me, further cooking is always going to be good. So I won't have that heter. Has to be A, fully cooked, and fully further cooking is bad. You don't want it. It'll be detrimental to your needs. That's one exception. The other exception is what we call kedera chaisa. The pot has raw meat in it. If you put any amount of raw meat into a pot before Shabbos, you may leave that pot on an uncovered fire. In all other situations, that's what we learned last week. The law will change, there'll be different opinions, but based on what we learned last week, in all other situations, the fire must be covered. You must put a blech on your fire, your source of heat. If the food, for example, is fully cooked and further cooking is good for it, covered fire. The meat in the pot is not raw, covered fire. And so on and so forth. That's what we got to in the Mechaber last week. And the reason for this concern that you have to cover the fire, we're worried that you're going to play with the coals. You're going to say, oh, I want my food faster. Oh, I have guests coming. I need the food ready. I want it for tonight, not tomorrow. We're worried you're going to stoke the coals. So the rabbis made a decree that we have to use a covered flame lest we be tempted to stoke the coals, which would be an Isser Doraisa. People are so nervous when it comes to food and food preparation and catering and guests. The rabbi said, hey, we got to protect this malacha. And Bishul is the only malacha that has such protections. All other malachas don't have such protections. Okay? We don't say, you know, cover up all your strings in the house lest you make a knot on Shabbos. Because knot is Doraisa, making a knot is Mr. Doraisa. We don't say, you know, any strings or ropes you have in the house, hide it, cover it. No. But fire, hide it, cover it. You got to cover the fire. Okay. So I think we roughly got middle of the Mishnah Brura. Help me out, guys. Are we at Mishnah Brura?
We are.
Yudalid, Tesvav.
We are on.
Yud Het was the last one.
Yeah.
We got to right to the bottom.
Yeah,
okay. So then we said if you don't have a covered flame, what you could do is you could put your pot outside the oven, adjacent to the oven, and enjoy the oven's heat. It's only on or in the oven is a problem if the fire is uncovered. Okay.
I have a question.
Sure.
Who defines whether it's good or not for the food, leaving it on? And what if you're cooking it for a group of people and someone at, more cooked and someone at less cooked?
Right. So it is subjective. So, and by the way, also muktzah is very subjective. For you, it might be a stone. For me, it's a doorstop. So for me, it's not muktzah because a doorstop you can use on Shabbos. But for you, it's a stone. It's muktzah for you. Unless you want to throw it at cars that are driving on Shabbos, then it might be mutter. Because like some people do that. I don't know. They use stones for these types of purposes, and maybe it's not muktzah. But you know what I'm saying. So yes, it is subjective, and many things in halacha could be subjective for me, for you. Begedisha, subjective, and so on and so forth. Yeah. So, I mean, you go, be subjective. Be honest with yourself. Is further cooking good for this pot, for this dish, for this food, or is further cooking detrimental to the pot, to the food? Okay, so we're going to, we'll go to Mishnah Berurah Tet Zayin. We'll just back up one or two steps. We'll go to Tet Zayin. And that was talking about putting a pot beside an oven, on the outside. Okay, just let me make sure I close my phone too. I think I did. And yes, I did. Okay.
Right, so Tet Zayin.
So Ted Zion was talking about using putting a pot beside an oven. Unfortunately, you didn't cover the oven. You didn't cover the fire. And by the way, we learned there's two ways to cover a fire. One is called grufa, and the other one is called ktuma. I keep saying cover a fire because that's the way it's done nowadays. But in the Talmudic era, you had ktuma, covering the fire, or grufa, removing fire, right? Garuf, sweeping out the coals. So in our day and age, we don't really can't really sweep out, you know, the knobs and we cover the fire. Okay. So Kedera says the Mishnah Brura, Hainu, Gan Ken, a few like Pashla Shlish. Even if the pot is not even cooked, no problem. The cave and the Eno Ella Sumech Lomi Bachut, since you're only putting the pot outside the oven, Lo Chamir Haikira Migrufa Ktuma Hanal, it's not any more machmer than a stove which would have been properly covered. The Mutter Sham La Hashois, a few Lomi Pashla Kedei Shlish. And a covered fire, as we're about to learn later on in the end of the halacha, when the fire is covered, there are no restrictions. Okay, when you have a covered fire, there's no restrictions. Partly cooked, fully cooked, raw meat, not raw meat, nothing matters. When you have a covered fire, nothing matters. So what we're saying over here is we're treating the outside of an oven as if it's a covered fire. Just like on a covered fire, nothing matters. So too, you're merely benefiting from the heat of an oven without touching the oven, without going inside the oven. Doesn't matter what the status of the food in the pot is. Besamuch chutzola yud zayin mishnah brura haim afilu im hayad to lettuce b'makam ahu. Even if it's boiling hot, steaming hot, no problem. You're not on the stove. You're not in the stove. No problem. You're allowed to benefit from the heat of the stove as long as you're not touching the appliance. Mutter lahashois aleha. What was that going on? I'm going to review back up in the mishnah in the Shulchan Aruch over here. So the Shulchan Aruch said. I'm reading the last line of the Mechaber at the top. V'im huska bekash oy begvava. If your fuel and your kira, if the fire in your kira was fueled by the lousy stuff, kash stra gvava stubble. Mutter lashreis aleya filu eina lo grufa lo ktuma. There's no restrictions. There's no need to cover a fire. There's no restrictions on the food. No restrictions on the oven. No restrictions on the fire. If your oven is being fueled by the lousy stuff. Okay, the kash and the gvava. So, looking at Mishnah Berurah Yud Ches, we said it's mutter to keep a pot on top of a kira if the kira is being fueled with lousy fuel, the kash or gvava. Says Mishnah Berurah, v'adim v'tocha, not only are you allowed to put your pot on top of an open fire on a kira when the fire is fueled by the bad stuff, but even inside the oven, you could enjoy the oven. The kevan tigrufa damya, since it's considered like grufa. When you're fueling your fire with lousy materials, it's considered a form of grufa. And you put in your pot of food before Shabbos begins. Ba'od yom means before Shabbos begins. Mali tocha, mali al gaba. What do I care? And it's true, too. It's also true when fire is covered. When the fire is covered, you can put your pot in the kira. You can put your pot on top of the kira. It doesn't matter. Okay? So too, when the fire is uncovered, and the fire is being fueled by kash and gvava, no problem, no need to cover the fire, and you can put your pot on top of the stove, or you can put your pot inside the stove. Yotes afila eina, if it's not grufa ktuma, we said there's no restrictions on a kira that's being fueled with straw and stubble. The fish ein b'chashash chitui, why are there no restrictions on a fire that's being fueled by straw and stubble? We're not concerned you're going to stoke the coals. Shemiyad shekala shalheves kala gam hagacheles. Because as soon as the flame dies down, the coals die down. There's no benefit in stoking the coals. And so when your fire is being fueled with straw or stubble, you don't have to cover the fire. You're allowed to put a pot of food before Shabbos on the open fire. No matter what the status of the food is, raw, cooked, half cooked, third cooked, anything. Further cooking is good, further cooking is good. No restrictions. No restrictions on akira that's fueled with straw or stubble. And one more time, if your kira is fueled with wood and the good stuff, yes, you need a covered fire. You must cover your fire unless, as we learned, unless the food is fully cooked before Shabbos comes in and further cooking is detrimental, or there's raw meat in the pot. When those two conditions are met, you may leave your pot on an open fire. This is, by the way, this is the reason, by the way, that many people, they make chont in a crock pot. And the crock pot doesn't have a blech. That's the heter. You have a pot, you have a canister. Right? The crock pots, in the olden days it was one piece, but today most crock pots are two piece. You have the actual pot where you put your beans and potatoes and your meat, and they put the pot into a canister. The canister is your fire. It's your source of heat. It's what cooks the cholent. What's the heter? It's an open fire. There's no blech in there. The heter is, you have to have raw meat. If you are a vegetarian, you may not do this. It is forbidden to use a crock pot if the food is raw before Shabbos, there's no meat in the pot. The only heter to use a crock pot for a vegetarian chulent is it's fully cooked before Shabbos comes in, and further cooking is detrimental. So how do you get around this? You got to blech up your crock pot. How do you blech up your crock pot? So what you do is you put aluminum foil throughout the inside of the canister, you put the pot on top of the aluminum foil, and that's your covered fire, that's your blech. And when that's done, you can put anything into your crock pot before Shabbos, whether it's partly cooked, not fully cooked. There's no restrictions because you have a covered fire.
What about if you put two tuna fish cans in the bottom? So it's lifted out, and it's like...
Okay, the lifting out thing, I think, I don't know if you realize what you're asking, but you're touching on the issue of hatmana. Could it be that you might be thinking about the concept of hatmana, which is something we're going to learn in great detail. Hatmana says you're not allowed to have a pot fully covered or insulated before Shabbos comes in on a fire. You know how people put blankets on top of pots in your water? It's forbidden.
Well, they should cut the blech cover?
No, they put the blech, and they put towels on top of pots that's on a blech.
Yeah, but what about the things that you can buy that...
It's a Shabbat on it.
Yeah.
The Shabbat warmer.
That's it.
No, it's a blanket you put over there.
Yeah, it's almost a quilt.
A tassor if it covers it completely.
Right,
if
it covers it completely.
It's a blech cover. It's what we call a blech cover. They're sold in most Judaica shops.
Yeah. I'm not sure even about blech cover. I can tell you that you put a blanket on a pot, over a pot, drape a blanket over a pot that's on a source of heat, and the pot is pretty much covered by this blanket, it is forbidden. Forget the fire hazard. We're not even going there. But it's forbidden. Yes, people do it. It's usher. Completely. The only heter is if a significant amount of the pot is exposed. And that's where the tuna fish cans come in. Because they say that the pot is in the canister and not enough of the pot is exposed. So you have an ister hatmana. So they put rocks or tuna fish cans to raise the pot out a little bit so the pot is not completely insulated by the canister. The pot is not completely hatmana. It's not completely covered by the canister. And then you get around that problem. Now, back to your original question, the way you phrased it. Can a tuna can be considered a covered fire? I don't know. It can.
Oh, no.
I'm
just saying raising it and not...
The raising is a hatmana issue. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva that the crock pot is not hatmana because the handles of the pot are outside the canister.
Right.
And he essentially says that's enough. That's enough of an exposure of the pot, so it's not full hatmana. But it's a very slippery opinion. It's not so widely accepted. So many people do put rocks and things in their canister to raise the pot up a little bit. Usually stone. You put a tuna fish can, you're going to be cooking the tuna fish in the can.
No, an empty can.
Oh, an empty can. Yeah, that'll be a rock or an empty can.
Yeah,
okay,
thank
you.
So let me just make sure I understand what you're saying. So if you have you put your food on a blech, it's all cooked and whatever, and you put your challah on the blech.
Blech, you're saying a covered fire. Let's make clear.
We're talking about on a blech.
Yeah, you have a stove. That's a stove top. You cover the stove top with a metal sheet. That's a blech.
Yeah, right. Whatever. I mean, you buy the electric blechs.
That's a Shabbos platter.
Shabbos platter.
Now, I hold that a Shabbos plata is not a cooking device. It's a heating device, which means you don't need a blech on it. That's my chiddush, my opinion. That's what I do.
Well, you don't need a blech on it. I don't follow that. Shabbos plata, what do you mean when you say you don't need a blech on it?
You don't cook on a Shabbos plata. You keep food warm on Shabbos plata.
Correct.
You don't need a blech.
You mean you don't need a cover?
Don't need a cover.
But is it a problem covering something on the plata?
Yes, you cannot drape a towel over a pot on the Shabbos plata. If the pot is 80-90% covered by this blanket or towel, it is absolutely forbidden. It's a violation of hatmana. The only hatmana that's permissible is if the pot is off the fire, and then you wrap up the pot. But a pot on a source of fire is
so if you put a layer above the plata and then put the pot on it, then you can cover it completely?
No. As long as the pot is directly above a source of heat, you may never completely cover your pot. What you could do is you can take like a large plate that is the circumference of the plate is larger than the top of the pot. And when you put a towel over the plate, over the pot, the towel is not hugging the sides of the pot because the plate is keeping the towel from touching the sides of the pot because the plate is larger than the... Can we get a plate over here?
Oh, okay.
I understand what you're saying. What?
Okay.
So if I do this, like that.
Follow that.
Yeah.
But what if it completely encircles the pot and goes all the way down?
Fine. If it's not snug on the pot walls, I believe it's mutter.
So basically, the thing is, it can't touch.
It can't be fully touching and hugging the pot. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a biggie, actually. It's a biggie.
I know.
It's a biggie.
But it's so commonplace.
It's amaratus.
Which means?
People are ignorant of the halacha.
Amaratus.
It's amaratus. It's amaratus.
Okay,
but again, there is wiggle room, what's called fully covered, what's called... There is wiggle room over there, but...
Often people cover a bunch of things with one blanket, but nothing is completely wrapped tight.
Yeah,
right. So there is wiggle room. There is wiggle room over there.
It's literally just a cover on top. It's not, as you used to say, it's not hugged. It's not tight. It's not wrapped on the individual pot. It's just literally sitting on top.
Yeah, there is wiggle room there. The best example here for this purpose right now, before we get to Hatmana, is its own chapter. It's its own chapter. But just think of the canister and the chalon pot. That's a problem because the canister and the chalon pot are fully hugging each other. There might be a millimeter of space.
That's a more understandable.
Right. So there is wiggle room and subjectivity beyond that. Okay? But
also a big case of shalom bites.
Yeah. But science says that you really don't gain much if the pots are draped when they're on the Shabbos pot or on the blech. You really don't gain that much.
I think it's more psychological.
Yes. So there's no need for it, especially if it's a subject to machlekes. Why get it yourself into machlekes?
Yeah, well. Okay, hey.
Yeah. Weiss can all call me next week. I have wife's visiting hours, so Weiss can come to that complaint. Okay, but just listen, if you do it, just make sure the pot is clearly partly exposed. Partly exposed. Okay, that's objective, but you know, you look in the mirror, you're at Shemaim. Is exposed? It's covered. Okay, Weiter.
Okay.
We're in the Ramah now. I'm going to say the Ramah. And the Ramah says like this, Shtei kiras, amatimoi zu etzel zu, v'doifim shel cheres b'neihem. You have two kiras, two stovetops, ovens, side by side. They share a wall. Ha'achas grufa k'tuma, v'shnei ane grufa k'tuma. The first oven is properly covered, but the adjacent oven that shares a wall with the other oven is not properly covered. No problem. Mutter la shois ala grufa k'tuma. You can still use a properly covered fire, even though afalpi shemosif hevel misheena grufa k'tuma, even though the oven right beside it that's not covered and therefore cannot be used on Shabbos is going to add heat to the oven you are using, no problem. It's allowed to add heat. You're allowed to benefit from the heat that the uncovered oven is adding to the properly covered oven. Says the Mishnah Brura. There is no Mishnah Brura over there. Chaf. Top of the next page. Afal pisha mosif hevel, you're allowed to benefit from the adjacent oven that's not properly covered. Okay, even though it's going to add heat to the oven you're using, that is properly covered, no problem. Perush bekira grufa, it's adding heat to the properly covered kira. Okay, remember what's a kira? Kira is an oven with two openings at the top for two pots side by side. Vahava mina, I might have thought, the lehevek ena grufa, you might think, if my oven shares a wall, with an oven that's not properly covered, I can't even use the oven that is properly covered, like a knas, like a punishment. Okay, two ovens that are adjacent. You might think I can't use a properly covered oven if it's gaining heat from an oven that's not properly covered. We come to learn that, no, it's not true. Don't think like that. And even on Shabbos, you're also allowed to do chazara on a properly covered oven, even though it shares a wall with an oven that's not properly covered. Here's a picture, right? We have two ovens side by side. One is properly covered, and one is not properly covered, and one is exposed. No problem. I'm allowed to use this oven before Shabbos for cooking a pot. I'm allowed to take the pot off on Shabbos and put it back on Shabbos. No, even though this fire is not properly covered, no problem. Even though they share a wall, no problem. As long as the appliance that I am using is properly covered, I don't care that the appliance is gaining heat from an adjacent appliance that I can't use. Not a problem. Okay. Adkan Kira. Everything we learned till now, last week and this week, has to do with the Kira oven. Now we're going to learn about the Tanur oven. Okay? Tanur is a very severe type of appliance. It has tremendous amount of heat. This is what a tanur like looks like. It's a teepee. It's a teepee with only room for one pot. There's room for only one pot, not two pots. And because it's a teepee, because it's a cone, the heat is more intense. Because the heat starts at the bottom and raises up the cone, which is more narrow at the top, which means more heat is contained, which means it's a hotter cooking device. So tanurim are very bad. The Mechaber doesn't like tanurim. Let's see what he says. The tanur, if we're using a tanur before Shabbos, afilu imhusat bekashu gvava, even if you're fueling your oven with the lousy stuff, with the straw and the stubble, asur. It's forbidden to use the oven. Afilu lismochlo, even to use the outside of the oven's walls. Even next to the oven, it's forbidden. Afilu imhugaru fekatum, and even if the fires are covered. Basically, what the Mechaber is saying is you may not use a tanur. Not before Shabbos for Shabbos, and certainly not on Shabbos for Shabbos. I'm going to say it again in the words of a tanur regarding the oven. Afilum husat bekashu gvava. Even if it's fueled with the bad stuff, straw and stubble, which we saw that by Kira, if your Kira is fueled with straw and stubble, you don't even have to cover the fire. But a tanur, even if it's fueled with the bad stuff, a fuel is smoke low. You can't use it. And even outside it, you can't use it. You can't use the heat of its walls. You can't put a pot adjacent to the stove on the outside to benefit from its heat. That fuel mugaru fekatum, that's true even if the fire is covered. Okay, and the Ramah just adds that kol zezman shayad. So let us bow. This, of course, if the oven is still hot. But if you turned off your oven, so to speak, turned it off, you know, you closed up shop over here at 2 o'clock Friday afternoon, and comes Friday night, and it's really not that hot anymore, just a bit of warmth, yes, you can use your oven.
So basically, the tanur is
off-limits.
Off-limits.
The Mechaber says that a tanur is off-limits completely. You cannot put a pot on it before Shabbos, seemingly no matter what the status of the pot
is. Or beside it, because it's a cone, you couldn't...
Or beside it. You cannot get any benefit. Inside, right. Not inside... Not on top, not even adjacent on the outside. And actually, the Mechaber just says, I think, what you just asked. But kol sheken, how much more so? She'asru l'hashois betocho o al gabo. You can't use the inside of the oven or the top of the oven. The oven is completely off limits. Okay, let's look at the Mishnah Berurah on the oven, because this is it. Mechaber is going to continue with another appliance. We're on Mishnah Berurah Chaf Aleph. V'tanur. Okay, the oven. Says the Mishnah Berurah, Hainu, what's a tanur? B'tanur shalahem shasuyot kekira. It kind of looks like a kira on the top, okay, because you can put a pot onto the opening. Ach mitoch shektzarois lemala verachav lemata, since it's narrow at top, but wider at the bottom, niklat kumo letocho tfei mekira. The heat is more intense in the oven than it is in a kira. The heat is more intense in a tanur due to its cone shape than the heat is in a kira. Lekach hechmiru bo yoter mikira, and therefore, because it's extreme heat, they were more machmer, the sages, with a tanur over a kira. Mishnah Berurah Chaf Beis. Afilu mugaruf, and the tanur is off limits, even if it's filled with straw, even if you cover the fire, and even on the outside. Okay? Why? Afilim hugaruf, says Mishnah Berurah. Why? Mipnei shagoyref eina goref ela roif ha'esh atzma v'yashar shalot tisha'er nitzotz echad. The reason a tanur is so off limits, even if the coals were removed, because he says you can only remove the majority of the fire in the coals. He says that when you're trying to empty out a tanur, it's impossible to get every coal, and we're worried that you might stoke the coals of the few remaining nitzotzot. Okay? So you have a pile of coals in an oven, and I guess the broom they use, the sweep, the chimney sweep, whatever you call this thing they use to empty out the coals of a tanur, I guess it simply couldn't get everything.
So it's two things. Well, is it the same thing that because you can't clean it properly, it gets hotter?
Not that it gets hotter, but because you can't clean it properly, there will still be coals in there. And even stoking those one or two or three coals that remain will cook food. We'll say it again in the words. V'pnei shagoyref, because sweeping out the coals, eino goref, can only sweep out, ela roiv ha'esh atzma, the majority of the fire. V'yefshar shalot tisher nitzot echad, it's not possible to get it, that you don't even have anything still burning in the oven. U'betanur shechum orav, and since the oven's heat is intense, Chayshinan, we are concerned. Shema yichate, you might stoke these few remaining embers, these few remaining coals. Kadei shivaru oisam hanitzotzos, to cause these coals to burn hotter and cook your food. There's a concern, you're going to break Shabbos. Therefore, the oven is off limits. Vehine miloshon mechaber. It seems from the wording of the Shulchan Aruch, mashma desfira leike dasator. It seems that the Mechaber agrees with his predecessor, the Tur. Dafilu bekash ubigvava asur begaru v'katum. As we said, as the Mechaber himself here said, that even if your tanur is fueled with straw or stubble, the bad stuff, your tanur is off limits even if the fire's covered. So the Mechaber wrote that right here, black on white. Mishnah Berurah is bringing to our attention, that's what the Tur says as well. And the Mishnah Berurah continues that Chen Hu Das Rabbeinu Yehonasan, Hamuvav Chidush Ran. It's also the opinion of Rabbi Yehonasan that can be found in the Ran. Achen. However, listen to this. This is the dissenting opinion. Milashon HaRambam. However, from the Rambam, who is a big guy, he's an authority. Mashma. It seems from the Rambam, the Bikash Ugvava. If the tanur is indeed fueled by the bad stuff, the straw and the stubble, eino asur betanur, the tanur is not off limits, ki im be'eino garuf, only when it's uncovered the fire. Mashma from the Rambam, if your tanur is fueled with the bad stuff, the straw and the stubble, and it's covered, no problem. Enjoy your tanur, just like you could enjoy your kira.
But we don't hold like him.
Oh.
Well, we don't use it, wait, continue.
What does the Mishnah Berurah end off with? The Chen Udas HaKolbo. The Kolbo seems to agree with the Rambam. The Chidushi Aran seems to agree with the Rambam. The Yesh LaHakel Bazev. He says you should be lenient. The Mishnah Berurah ends off, which is fascinating, by the way, because the Mishnah Berurah has a shita on Psak Halacha. I'm going to tell you guys a secret now, Psak Halacha. The Mishnah Berurah Shita and Halacha, and Pasmin Halacha, is cover all your bases. That's a Pasmin's Halacha. He's usually more Machmer, usually, because his Shita is, if you have, you know, five opinions that say this, and four opinions that are more lenient, cover all your bases, do the strict opinion. Here, he's going against the Mechaber, the Tur, Rabbeinu Yonasan, and he's saying, go like the Rami, can be lenient. It's interesting. It's not the Mishnah Berurah's expected way of paskening. The Mishnah Berurah is generally, let's cover all our bases and be as firm as we can. Here he's being very bold and saying, you know what? No. I know what the Torah says. I know what the Shulchan Aruch says. But I'm telling you, go like the Rambam. Very significant. I'll just make one point, and that is that this has no relevance today whatsoever. Why? I'll tell you why. Because every cooking appliance today, although some may disagree with what I'm about to say, but the halacha is in accordance with what I'm about to say. Every cooking appliance today has a din of akira. Whether it's your oven, which we call in Hebrew a tanur, or it's your Shabbos plata, or it's this thing or that thing. Shabbos plata, like I said earlier, is more lenient because it's not even a cooking device, it's a heating device. There's more leniency with the Shabbos plata, and we'll get to that in great detail at the right time. But everything today, in the oven, on the oven, stovetop, gas, fire, electricity, whatever you want, everything has a din kira, which means by extension, if that fire is covered, there's no restrictions whatsoever. You can put anything on this source of fire, this source of heat. Okay, so that is the conclusion of the Mishnah Berurah with ovens. The ovens are mutter if it's fueled with the cheap stuff and it's covered. Okay, then we had the Ramah that just brought to our attention something that was actually rather obvious. The Ramah said that which an oven is always off limits, according to the Machaber, that's only if the oven is still hot. If the oven is not hot anymore, it would be mutter, as the Ramah says, calls man shayad soleresbo. Looking at the Mishnah Berurah, chaf gimel, shayad soleresbo. If the oven is not hot anymore because you threw water on the fire at 2 o'clock Friday afternoon and it's no longer hot by the time Shabbos comes in, you can even use the top of the oven. Put your pot on top of the oven if it's not yatza letzbo. And a filo with Shabbos, even on Shabbos, you can use not just a tanur, but anything that's not yatza letzbo. Anything that has any warmth whatsoever, as long as it's not yatza letzbo, you can use that on Shabbos as well. That's possible that even if the coals, there's a couple of coals in this tanur that weren't covered, but the tanur is not yet soleres bo, it's still mutter to use the oven. As long as it's not yet soleres bo, even if there's an exposed fire there, it would be okay. As long as a place you put down the pot is not yet soleres bo, nothing else matters. And I don't know if I said this, I'll say it and probably hear me say it many times. In halacha, hot is defined as above yetzoletes bo, cold is defined as below yetzoletes bo. That's it. That's it. Yetzoletes bo, let's call it 40 degrees. Some say 38, some say 42. Let's call it 40 degrees. 40, I think it's 42 is a more common opinion, actually.
Can you just repeat that? Sorry.
In halacha, hot is defined as yad soletes bo.
Mm-hmm.
Something that's yetzoletes bo is called hot in halacha. Something that's not yet soleres bo, no matter how warm and enjoyable it is called cold. If it's below yet soleres bo, it's called cold.
Okay.
What if you put it on when it's not yet soleres bo and it heats up?
Oh, so that's a famous shiloh. What about this shiloh? Let me throw this back at you. You take pots out of the fridge Shabbos morning, put on the Shabbos plata, it's going to go on the timer in an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Are you allowed to do that? Hey, you like that, Shaila? Shabbos morning, you take your food out of the fridge.
Yeah.
For simplicity, we'll say it's cold and dry. Won't go to soup yet. Oh, soup is more complicated. But you take your cold, dry food.
Cold, cooked.
Fully cooked and dry, that's correct. Fully cooked and dry. And you put it on a source of heating. Put on a cooking appliance.
No.
And the timer is going to go on in an hour.
To put it onto a Shabbos platter.
Shabbos platter is not a good example. Because it's a heating device, not a cooking device. But let's say you had a heat cooking device. You had your oven. The inside of the oven! Okay, people, you can use the inside of the oven on Shabbos. Nobody does, because it's unwieldy. It's very complicated. But let's say the inside of your oven will go on with the timer.
Mm-hmm.
An hour after you put the food Shabbos morning from the fridge into the oven. Can you do that? The answer is no. You're not supposed to use a timer on a cooking device on Shabbos. Unless that food was on the cooking device before Shabbos began. Then it's okay. That's a general rule. Now, the Shabbos plata is less of a problem because it's a heating device, not a cooking device. Anyways, the Shabbos plata really should be on from the beginning of Shabbos.
Continuously.
What some people do, though, is when they know they won't need the Shabbos plata anymore, like after lunch, the timer turns it off.
Hmm.
Save yourself electrical bills, maybe. But that's okay. But no, you're not supposed to, as your example was, if the oven is not on or the item is not on, you should not take your food and put it on the now cold item, which will be heated up by a timer or by whatever.
That's in a cooking device.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're talking two different things, cooking devices as opposed to heating devices.
Right. There are leniencies that I subscribe to, if needed, to put your Shabbos plata on a timer, both for on and off. I've never done it. I don't see a true need. I don't think you're saving that much on electrical bills because you want to use a plata Friday night. You want to use a Shabbos day also. It just And if it doesn't go on properly in the timer, you're in bigger trouble, you know. So get a power failure during the night. Your timer goes off, but the power goes back on, but your timer's still behind because it was off, the power's off. So you won't have hot food on Shabbos day, which happens frequently. This happens frequently, that while you're sleeping at night, you have a rain, the power goes out, but Shabbos morning, wake up, the power's back on. It happens a lot. If you have had your Shabbos pot on a timer, you're toast. You're not going to have hot food Shabbos lunch because your timer is hours behind however long the power is out. But if you didn't have a timer, the power goes back on, the Shabbos pot goes back on.
Rarely are we out of power for more than a few seconds or minutes.
Yeah, but I don't see, between this and that and this and that, I don't see a benefit to put a Shabbos pot on a timer, but I guess it would be much. Okay, back to the Mechaber. No, we have one more Mishnah Berurah on what we saw. One more Mishnah Berurah 24, Chaf Dalet, and that is again on the Mechaber's opinion that ovens are completely off limits, and the Mechaber just concluded with a kol sheken she'asher la'shoyis betocho o al gabo, whether it's in the oven or on the oven's off limits. Mishnah Berurah Chaf Dalet, a kol sheken she'asher v'davka belonis bashel kol tzarko. So Mishnah Berurah says that's only if the food is not completely cooked, or it's completely cooked, but further cooking would be good for it. If the food is fully cooked and further cooking is detrimental, mutter. He says in Mishnah Berurah, it is mutter. You can put it in the tanur, you can put it on the tanur. V'chen b'kedera chaisa. Again, kedera chaisa is a term we saw and we will see more. Kedera chaisa is that term that means you have a raw piece of meat in the pot when Shabbos comes in. V'chen b'kedera chaisa. If you have a pot of raw meat when Shabbos comes in, you're allowed to use your oven, afilu be'eino goru fekatum. You can use your tanur oven, your tanur, even if it's uncovered. Well, I just want to think about this for a second. Something came into my mind. It's interesting. The Mechaber said, the Shulchan Aruch said, a tanur is completely off limits, even if it's filled with the small stuff, the cheap stuff, the bad stuff, even if it's covered. And for sure, you can't put it on or in. But the Mishnah Berurah comes over here, and I'm not sure, this is my doubt, this is what I'm thinking about in my head, guys. I'm thinking about, is the Mishnah Berurah saying pshat in the Shulchan Aruch, or is he saying his own ruling? I'm a bit torn in my head what's going on over here. I believe it could also be pshat in the Shulchan Aruch. That's what I think. I think the Mishnah Berurah is saying here in Chaf Dalet that even the Mechaber would agree if the food is fully cooked and further cooking is detrimental, even the Shulchan Aruch, who's very anti-tanur as we've seen, would allow use of the oven even if it's an uncovered fire. Kach nireli. Okay, adkan tanur. Back in the Shulchan Aruch on top, we're going to talk about the third type of appliance. The third type of cooking appliance, that's called the kofach. That's called a kofach. Here is a picture of a kofach. It looks like a kira, but only room for one pot on top. Okay, this is a kofach. It looks like a kira, but only room for one pot. So kofach and kira are very similar. The tanur is that cone-shaped, also room for one pot, like the kofach, but very, very hot. Tanur is the hottest item. Okay, because only room for one pot, and it's cone. The cone retains the heat because it's wider on the bottom, narrow at the top, and therefore tanur is your enemy. Okay, except, like we just saw in Mishnah Berurah, if the food is fully cooked and further cooking is detrimental, that's the only condition you can use a tanur. The kofach. Regarding the kofach, says the Shulchan Aruch, what is it? Shehu makom shvisas kedera achas. It's a type of cooking appliance that only accommodates one pot at the top. Im husak bekasha gvava. If the kofach is fueled with the lousy stuff, the straw and the stubble, dino kikira, all the rules of kira kick in. Begefes I beitzim, but your kofach is fueled with the good stuff, good wood. Dino ketanur, the laws of tanur kick in. And the Rama here alludes to something I mentioned, and that is vatanurim shalanu, modern day ovens, modern day tanurim, dinam kikira, have a status of a kira, not a status of an oven. And I added to that, and I said that all cooking appliances in our day and age have a status of a kira.
So basically, this kopach is in that context, it's a kira.
Again, the Shulchan Aruch says, if your kopach is fueled with straw and stubble, has a din of a kira. If your kopach is fueled with wood, has a din of a tanur. But again, in our day and age, we don't have the Talmudic tanur. We don't have the Talmudic kira. We certainly don't have the Talmudic kofach. We have stovetops. We have ovens. And everything today has a din of a kira, which is a leniency, okay? Which is good for us that everything has status of a kira. We don't have to worry, is it a tanur? Is it covered? Is it kash? Is it kvava? No. Everything today has a din of a kira. Okay. Mishnah Brura, Chaf Hei. Shehu Makom said, Kofach has room for one pot. To Asuik Ein Kira. It looks like a Kira. Ela de Kira Makom Shvizah Shtei Kederos. But the Kira has room for two pots at the top. The Kofach Hu Makom Shvizah Kedera Achas. Kofach has room for one part at the top. The Fichach, since it only has one opening, Nafish Havle Mekira. It is hotter than the Kira. Shamakom Tsar, because the place is narrow. Vachom Mitkabetz Bo Yoter, and heat accumulates more. Vezutar Havle Mit Tanur. However, the Kofach is less hot than a Tanur. Okay, this is basic science. And the Kofach has room for two pots, which means it has two openings, which means there's a lot of room for heat to escape. A tanur has one opening atop, which means there's less room for heat to escape, plus it's a cone. Wide on the bottom, narrow at the top, which further allows for heat buildup. So tanur is the hottest. The kofach is in between in terms of heat. There's room for one pot, there's one opening on it, and therefore there is some room for heat to escape. But not like a kira, which has two openings, which means there's more room for you to escape. Okay, that's the story. We are in Chafav of the Mishnah Brura, Dino Kekira. We said that the kofach has a din of kira if it's fueled with the bad stuff, the kashuk baba. Da filu lo garuf es akash velo katam. And that's true, it has a din of a kira even if it's not covered, the fire is not covered. So it has a status of a kira for all purposes, all practical purposes. Chav Zayin in Mishnah Brura, we said if it's fueled with the wood, the good stuff, your kofach has a status of a tanur. Dino ketanur, shafil garf ekvatam asur. And that is, even if you cover the fire in your kofach that was fueled with wood, it's still forbidden. Bein betocha, bein al gaba, whether in the kofach, whether on the kofach. Bein besmicha, even adjacent to the kofach, just like we saw with the tanur, the Mechaber said, you can't even benefit from the heat of a tanur by putting a pot beside your tanur. Chav Ches, the Mishnah Brura, is going on the fact that we mentioned that all cooking appliances today have a din of a kira. Vatanurim shalanu, our ovens, says the Mishnah Brura, shapia min atzad. Our ovens today have the opening on the side. That means front loading, like we have today. That's the same as we have today. It doesn't mean tzad, side, as we use in modern Hebrew. Tzad means not on top. So front-loading ovens, like we all have today. Okay, tanim shalanu, shapir mir tzad, ve'od shirechavim ve'yoter, they're very wide, ein chumam rav kol kach, it's not so much heat, ve'al ken dino kekira, and that's why our home ovens have a din of kira. U'besefer tifer shmuel, it says over there, b'shem ha-rashal, in the name of the rashal, shecholak al zeh, who disagrees, the soiver, the shavim, hem ladina, the holes that are ovens, have indeed the same status as a Talmudic tanur. Ayin sham, see there. Nevertheless, if you're talking about industrial ovens, shemasikim botadir vechumo rav, which are always hot, always being fueled, tov lahachmir, it's better to be machmir ledono ketanor. Okay, so as I said earlier, all cooking appliances today have a din of akira. That is indeed the halacha. The one exception to Mishnah Berurah is industrial ovens should be treated like the Talmudic ovens. But A, it's not relevant in our day and age. Because in our day and age, we don't use industrial ovens on Shabbos. Because nobody's in the factories on Shabbos.
Right, right.
So there's no relevance.
But what happens if a function was held in a simcha hall, and the simcha hall had an industrial... You know,
right. So even that's not called an industrial oven.
Isn't it?
I don't think so. In the olden days, why is this brought up over here in the Mishnah Berurah that's written at the beginning of the 20th century? Because in the olden days, the beginning of the 20th century, the turn of the century, people didn't have ovens at home. Mm-hmm. People didn't have ovens at home. So what would they do? They would take their children...
community ovens.
They would take their children to the bakery before Shabbos.
Right.
Everyone would put their children pots in the baker's oven. Yeah. And they'd come back Shabbos morning after the rabbi's drasha, after shul, get their children pot, and go home. That's industrial oven. Okay, so you go into Wonder Bread factory, and it's a huge oven. It's not the oven of the shul catering hall. It's like a massive...
Okay.
So a city can be put in these industrial ovens.
It's walk-in.
Yeah, yeah.
But what did the briskers do who don't hold by a roof? You can't leave a chillin pot.
Oh, so very good. I'll tell you something. In Europe, everyone held of a roof. And they held of a roofs so flimsy that today would be called a machal Shabbos if you followed them, if you kept them, without exaggeration. The Eruvin of Warsaw, of the big cities, were so flimsy and so bedievid, they had no choice. They didn't have water. They couldn't have water. Forget the hot chol. They didn't have water in their homes unless they went in the morning to the well to fetch the water. So they relied on radically, radically leaning into Eruvin that today wouldn't even come to the table. Great Rebbes. We're talking about the great Rebbes of Europe carried an Eruvin.
Necessity is the mother of convenience.
Yeah, sometimes. So these rabbis would be Michal Shabbos today. We'd call them Michal Shabbos. Okay, Adkan cooking appliances. We're going into a bit of a new topic. It's the same halacha. Halacha Aleph is full of information and concepts. We didn't even get to the halfway mark yet. We're going to talk about now, in the continuation of the Shulchan Aruch, is what if somebody violated the rules of Shehiya? You left a pot on an open fire that was not permitted to be left on an open fire. Can I eat the food? Can I not eat the food? Like the case of the vegetarian chulent in the crock pot. Right? The only heter to use a crock pot, really, on face value and surface value on the surface, is Kedera Chaisa. You put raw meat into your chulent, into the crock pot, minutes before Shabbos. That's a heter to use your crock pot, even though it's an uncovered flame. But like I mentioned earlier, if you're making a vegetarian chulent, there's no heter to use a crock pot, because a crock pot is essentially an uncovered flame. So what if a person made vegetarian chulent, you're invited guest, you're a guest, someone's out, you walk into the house, the chulent's vegetarian, and you put it up right before Shabbos? Oh, sir. So what's the din? Let's see. Shulchan Aruch. Avim shachach. If you accidentally forgot about the law, v'shaha, and violate shia, im shachach v'shaha, if you forgot about the laws, and you kept a pot of food over an uncovered fire that should not have been kept over an uncovered fire as Shabbos came in. So these are the laws. If the pot was fully cooked before Shabbos came in, mutter, you may eat the food afilu humitstamek v'yafilo. Even if further cooking is beneficial from the pot, is beneficial for the food. See, recall, gentlemen, that we saw earlier at the beginning of this halacha, that the only time you're allowed to keep food on an uncovered fire is if the food is fully cooked, and further cooking is bad.
Detrimental.
Exactly. Here, if you goofed up because you forgot, it was an accident.
Shogeg.
Yeah. We're going to let you eat the food as long as you meet the first requirement, that the food was fully cooked when Shabbos came in. even though as Shabbos went on and on and on, further cooking was beneficial. Okay, because it was accidental, because it was an honest mistake, we'll let you eat the food even though the further cooking was beneficial.
So there's two things then. It's, in fact, it's fully cooked and it was shogging.
Yes. Right. Has to be an accident. Okay? And then it was an accident, a truly an honest mistake. I had it before Shabbos. Somebody came into my house, a neighbor in the building, with some kind of Shabbos mistake. We'll laugh at it. But a person put rabbinut food into their pot or something. They're going nuts. They're going nuts. So my wife calmed them down. Anyways, that was funny. That was funny. Life in Ramat Beit Shemesh. Okay. Because his wife accidentally bought an item that didn't have the badatzach they usually use. And can they use the food? Could they eat the food on Shabbos that throw in the garbage? Anyways, my wife calmed them down. Everything was okay. But you messed up with Shehiyah. Not saying Chas V'Shalom, he put spices without a badatzach. We're not talking about that. We're talking about nothing about that. We're talking you accidentally messed up with Shehiyah. We accidentally messed up with Shehiyah. But the food was fully cooked before Shabbos came in. You may eat the food, even though further cooking is beneficial, and it's generally aser. But the mutav shel shehit chilis bashel, if the food in question only began to cook as Shabbos came in, the lobi shel kol tzarko was not fully cooked when Shabbos came in, aser ad matzei Shabbos. You're toast, man. You ain't eating that food on Shabbos. This week, you ain't eating that food. If you didn't even meet the fundamental requirement of the food being fully cooked before Shabbos, the food goes in the garbage, or use it Motzei Shabbos. Ad kan, accidental goof up of Shehiyah. Accidental violation of Shehiyah. Let's see the Mishnah Berurah Chavtes. Vim shachach hashah, the kol sheken im shagag bedin. Like Julian made clear, it's a shogig. Not just you forgot, it was a shogig. Innocent violation. Okay, lamed. Mishnah Berurah lamed. We said you may eat the food as long as it's fully cooked, even though the further cooking is beneficial. Says the Mishnah Berurah lamed. The afilu betocha tanur. This is true whether it's on the fire, in the fire, doesn't matter. V'atam, what's the reason we're lenient? Delo nene mimenu kol kach. The advantage, the benefit from the food, because further cooking was beneficial, that benefit you're gaining due to the post-cooking cooking, given the lav hacheru lechila, since in any event, the pot of food, the food could have been fully enjoyed as is, shespashal kol tarko, because it was fully cooked, v'alken b'dieved mutter. We're going to let you eat the pot of food. Why? I'll say it outside. The reason we let you eat the pot of food, as long as the food was fully cooked, even though the further cooking was beneficial, is because we call the further cooking that is beneficial insignificant benefit. Yeah, it's beneficial. Yeah, you like it better. I like a crispier cholent. But since the food before Shabbos was perfectly edible as is, it's edible, it's edible, it's edible. It's better edible, it's more edible, more tasty edible. We don't care. In an accidental goof-up, in Shehiyah, accidental violation of Shehiyah, we don't care. As long as it's fully cooked before Shabbos, you may eat it on Shabbos. Okay, because the further cooking that you're happy about is not considered significant. Okay, Lamed Aleph, Asur, that's going on the flip side, that if the food was not fully cooked before Shabbos, you may not eat the food on Shabbos. It's that simple. If the food was not fully cooked when Shabbos came in, you may not eat the food that Shabbos. L'chol Adam, any human being, nobody could eat the food. The kol shekhen libnei beisel dasa, and how much more so the members of the household who, you know, eat with you, who are dependent on you, they may not eat the food either. Kevan denispashel bishvilam. Because essentially, when mommy makes the food, she makes the food for herself, for her husband, for her kids, for the guests. And therefore, since it was made with everyone in mind, for everyone's benefit, nobody could eat the food. Ad motzei Shabbos, you'd have to save the food after Shabbos, if it wasn't fully cooked. Bahagois Ashri, or Asheri, different ways of pronouncing it. In the Ashri, Mavor, it says over there, Degam Bekan, even in this case, Hu Bekadei Sheyase, you've got to wait the amount of time it takes to cook a food. Let me explain. There's a general rule with Hilchos Shabbos, in any malacha, that you did a violation on Shabbos, you did a malacha on Shabbos, unintentionally, whatever malacha it is, not just cooking, though we're talking about cooking, but it applies to anywhere. When you accidentally violate Shabbos, as a general rule, it's not enough to wait till Motzei Shabbos to benefit from the malacha, to benefit from the act you did on Shabbos. But you have to wait once Shabbos ends, plus the amount of time that act takes to do. So let's say you accidentally cooked a chulent on Shabbos. Forget this example. You cooked a chulent, you woke up 10 a.m. Shabbos morning, you had no idea it was Saturday, turn on the fire, you cook a chulent up on Shabbos morning. How long does it take for a chulent to cook? 2 hours. Okay, it was all accidental. But you mamish cooked a chulent on Shabbos. Okay, so you broke Shabbos. You can't eat that chunk on Shabbos.
So it sounds like a penalty.
Yeah, that's correct. It's a knas. It is a penalty, exactly. So person makes a chulent on Shabbos morning, completely innocently, accidentally. Oh my gosh, what did I do? I broke Shabbos. Well, it goes without saying, as we just saw, you can't eat the food on Shabbos. But even after Shabbos, you're only allowed to eat the food 2 hours after Shabbos ends because it takes 2 hours to cook a chulent. If it was minute steak, it would be a minute after Shabbos. If you develop a photograph on Shabbos, the olden days we used to develop photographs. Remember that? You used to go to develop your film. Developing film takes 30 seconds once you have the film. Huh? So you have to wait 30 seconds after Shabbos to look at the picture you took a photo of on Shabbos. And so on and so forth. Okay? That's called Kedei Shiaseh. That's a term in Halacha called Kedei Shiaseh, which means you must wait after Shabbos before you're allowed to benefit from your accidental violation. You must wait the amount of time the violation takes, the act takes. Okay. So that is Lamed Beis. So we said Ad Motzei Shabbos. You would have to wait. It's not enough. Just the Shulchan Aruch said, wait till Motzei Shabbos. The Mishnah Berurah says, not just Motzei Shabbos. Or at least not according to the Ashri. The Ashri says, Gam Kan Ubekdei Shiyasi. You got to wait the amount of time it takes to cook the cholent. Kama Ba'avar V'Shah. As if it were an intentional violation. And we lash on a Rambam, but from the Rambam, lo nira ken, according to the Rambam, it seems that an unintentional violation of Shabbos, the food is mutter immediately. No need to wait whatsoever. But the Mishnah Berurah brings the Ashri that says even an unintentional, you've got to wait the long amount it takes to do the act. Says the Rama. Oh, okay. I'm in the Mechaber still, sorry. Avim Avar V'Shaha. And if you intentionally violated Shia, you're a sinner. Avim Avar V'Shaha. Asr B'Shnehem. Avim Avar V'Shaha. Asr B'Shnehem. I think it means... Oh, the Mishnah tells what it means. Let's look at Mishnah Berurah. Im Avar V'Shaha Asur B'Shnehem. There's no Mishnah Berurah. Yeah, there's Lamed Beis. No, there's not Lamed Beis. Lamed Beis on the previous one. We did it. Let me think about something for a second. Vim Avar V'Shaha, if you intentionally violated Shehiya, Asur B'Shnehem. Oh, Asur B'Shnehem is like this. It's mutter whether the pot is fully cooked or not fully cooked, and whether further cooking is detrimental or beneficial. Okay, when you intentionally violate Shabbos, the pot is forbidden no matter what. Says Rama, Ad B'Kedei Shiyasu, even for an intentional violation, you would be allowed to eat the pot Motzei Shabbos, but you have to wait Kedei Shiaseh, the amount of time it takes to cook up the item you forbiddenly cooked up. Okay. New item to teach. New item to talk about. New concept, new principle as we continue in the Ramah. What's the time check?
9:28.
Okay, so this is a good place to stop. Because the next thing is Chazara. Until now, we've been talking about Shehiyah. Shehiya, again, is a prohibition of leaving most types of pots on an open flame. Chazara is the act of putting back a pot onto a fire once you took it off. Very often, people on Shabbos, they take the cholent off the fire, and they serve some of the cholent. So they want to put the cholent back on the fire, because you might have guests in an hour that will want hot cholent. So you put the food back on the fire, you put the pot back on the fire. That's called chazara. We're going to learn how and when you're allowed to put a pot on the fire once it was taken off. We're going to learn next week.
Sure.